This is the Automotive Repair Podcast Network.
Welcome, everyone, to yet another episode of Diagnosing Aftermarket A to Z. I'm Matt Fonslow, and no good deed goes unpunished. That and more after a word from our sponsors, Pico Technology, Autel, and Independent Wrench Jobs. Are you chasing elusive automotive problems? Pico Technology empowers you to see what's really happening. Pinpoint faults in sensors, wiring, and components with unmatched accuracy. Picoscope oscilloscopes transform your diagnostic capabilities. Visit PicoAuto.com, that's PicoAuto.com, and revolutionize your diagnostics today. Autel delivers award-winning automotive diagnostic tools trusted by technicians across North America. Backed by Autel North America experts in sales, training, and technical support. From drivability diagnostics and TPMS service to ADAS and advanced safety systems, Autel helps technicians follow OEM procedures and repair with confidence. Learn more at Autel.com. Sponsored by Independent Wrench Jobs, tech-only jobs, no runaround. Built by Technician Find, helping tech since 2017. Join free at independentwrenchjobs.com. I guess at risk of sounding like I know what I'm doing, I'm going to tell you a little bit of a story outside of the repair shop. Then somehow, some way, I will weave this into the shop. It shouldn't be that hard, right? Maybe I need to skip the whole story and just get right to the shop stuff, but I don't know. A good story is a good story, right? And I think this might be a good story. Maybe not. I guess we'll find out. So my wife, her oldest brother, owns a house, a townhouse. He owns the house. His mom lives with him, or their mom lives with him, and then their younger brother. So my wife and her older brother's younger brother to them lives there as well. And by younger, I mean, I'm pretty sure he's late 20s for sure. He might be 30. Not all that important. But it's a townhouse. It's a split level. So the oldest brother, the owner of the house, lives kind of in the basement, kind of has his own little living space and a bedroom and bathroom, stuff like that. And the upstairs is pretty much dominated by their mom. And then the younger brother has a bedroom. The upstairs bathroom has had issues for a while with toilet flushing and the toilet being wobbly, technical term, on the floor. And so my wife is kind of on this home improvement kick. We've been doing a few things around our house, and she thought it would be kind of cool for her brother's birthday if we kind of fixed up his bathroom, the upstairs bathroom, the one that is their mom and younger brother use primarily. I knew when the toilet's wobbly, the floor's rotted. I think any of you who do any of this stuff, or honestly, considering what we do for livings with kind of, I don't know, having some mechanical aptitude and how things work, most of us probably intuitively know that the issue isn't going to be just set a new toilet down and away we go. However, I don't think any of us really knew what it would turn into. I'm not going to go, it's not like worst case scenario, don't get me wrong, but you get the toilet lifted up. So this is the birthday present, right? We're going to do this for him. He'll buy the parts, if you will, buy the stuff and then materials, and then we'll kind of do the labor. And the idea was we'd spend a day or two up there and, you know, fix up the bathroom and, you know, put a new toilet down and lift up the linoleum and maybe replace the vanity and redo some of the, at least the plumbing trim of the shower, you know, so basically a new handle and shower head, stuff like that. Because the shower works. It's not leaking or anything like that. The valve's not leaking. So just, I don't know, pretty it up a little bit, paint, brighten it up, because it was a kind of a really dark tan, not quite brown in there. It was a earthy tones. So yeah, my wife is the one who designed it, if you will. I'm just the labor. I'm the cheap labor. I lift the toilet. The ring is gone. So it had a steel ring. So the wax ring sits on top of a ring that is usually screwed to the floor and kind of holds the drain line to the toilet, and it was gone. Just absolutely corroded away. There's nothing left of it. I have no idea why that toilet didn't leak everywhere. I have no idea. Well, obviously it did leak some, but I mean worse. The wax ring was pushed in to the drain, so it was really, I don't know, halfway clogged. I mean, at least halfway, which explained the flushing issues. And yeah, and then of course the floor was particle board. I just had my pocket knife on me and I could shove it right through the floor. Yeah, I started making some just cuts into the floor to see, like, just how bad was it? How far did this extend out? And it turns out, like, the toilet sits relatively near the bathtub. The bathtub is fiberglass, right? And very flexible. So whoever installed it did not put any sort of concrete, sacrete, those foam inserts for stability underneath the bathtub. So it's very flexible. If you stood in it, like, the floor of the bathtub moved a lot. Yeah, the floor was rotted up to and beyond the edge of the bathtub. So again, how it doesn't, I don't know, crack or make noises, I guess, when you're standing in it, I have no idea. But I cut out essentially a 5 foot by 5 foot piece of the bathroom floor, which is a little over half of it. I would have probably cut all of it out, but in removing the part I did, the floor joists are kind of engineered 2x4s, if you will, where they're, you know, don't get me wrong, they're like professionally assembled with the kind of the, they're probably named different things in different areas of the country. I don't know, but we would probably call them like the spiked plates, the nailing plates, stuffing like that, you know, where it's the metal with the spikes that they press in, and it's robust, don't get me wrong, but it's made out of 2x4s. The wide side is up towards the floor. I was under the impression that they should be 24 inch on center. Like, initially I was thinking 16 inch on center with regular joists that were maybe 2x12s or 2x14s or something like that. Those aren't what was under there. It was these other joists. So I think, you know, from what little I know, code would be 24 inch on center. These were all over the place. Not that there was just so many floor joists under this bathroom, but yeah, they were not 24 inch on center. They were, some were 22, some were 26. Very frustrating. They didn't look bowed or nothing. It just looks like they set them and that's where they were. And the floor being particle board also tongue and groove, so that gave it some more rigidity, more strength, but it made it a real pain for me. So floor's up, and now I have this toilet drain to deal with that the ring is gone, the steel ring. And I suppose I could have cut the flange, if you will, and set in a new one, or, you know, glued, or there's so many options. Because of the way they had this drain set up and the way it was reinforced, it had some spring tension pushing it up towards the toilet. So I was, you know, looking at my options, debating about cutting a pipe, and I elected to use really a replacement ring that's a split ring, if you will. It just splits in half, goes around the flange, and it worked perfectly. So I put down a 3/4 inch green treat, screwed it down to the floor. Being that it's green treat, it's a little bit swollen, right? They're moist. So they weren't exactly even with the dry particle board that was already in the floor. It's a little bit elevated, which I didn't like, but also I'm sure, you know, code would have been to put the freaking particle board back. It just doesn't sit well with me. Under a toilet, next to a bathtub. And then I guess I skipped the part. The bathtub, right? The floor is rotted going underneath the bathtub. There's nothing supporting it. So here I am building out of 2x4s reinforcements to run underneath the bathtub, especially along the edge one, giving me a nailing surface for the plywood I'm putting down, and two, to hopefully reinforce that bathtub. It was impossible to like inject anything in there for like a sacrete or just something. It wasn't going to happen. So I just reinforced it as best I could. Again, this is not my line of work. I am making this stuff up as I go and just trying to do what I think is best. But yeah, I get the plywood down, sand it to try to even it up a little bit. And then we put down luxury vinyl tile. I don't know where the luxury part comes from, but whatever. It looked nice. It goes down actually pretty easy into floating floor. You don't glue it down. There is underlayment with it. I debated about putting a real underlayment under it, but everything I could find said you just don't do that. And if you put this stuff down properly, which I'm not going to guarantee I did, I think I did, it's a sealed floor anyways. And then, you know, we get it all down, and then I caulked around the edges trying to make this as, you know, really moisture proof, waterproof as I can. Yeah, you know, set down the toilet, and then the vanity they get sits up quite a bit higher than the one that was there previously. So the drain from the sink doesn't go down far enough for the P trap. In a way, I kind of hate the way I sound, because I sound like I know what I'm doing. I can't explain to you enough. I have no idea. I make it up as I go. My background in home repair is minimal. Like, I did watch when we would my parents would have somebody come in and do some sort of work, put a window in the house, redid our bedroom. So I helped with the demo of that. We had plaster and lath walls. The walls were filled. The insulation in our walls in the house I grew up was newspaper, shredded newspaper. And then up in the attic, that was insulated with sawdust. So I was the one responsible for scooping that out. Just so happened my Christmas gift from my grandma, my paternal grandmother, snow shovel, little orange kid snow shovel fit perfectly. So that was the tool I had to use to scoop out the sawdust and then vacuum out the rest with just a regular vacuum cleaner because we didn't have a shop vac. Yeah, just watching that stuff, being around back in the day where you could kind of help and it wasn't really frowned upon. Nobody was worried about liability. Maybe they should have been, I don't know. But just kind of having my nose in everything, watching. If anything, watching, if I could, they'd let me help, I would help. And that was for the electricians, the plumbers. We redid part of the house. So again, maybe way more info than you care to know, but the house I grew up in, the farmhouse is a big Victorian style, I guess, technically Victorian. That isn't to blow it out of proportion. Don't get me wrong. This is not a luxurious house, but it's a big old farmhouse, big old rectangle. It was built on in, I think, like 1900 to a house next to it. It's kind of spliced together. And that house was falling off, like just was dangerous. Late middle school, early high school, that got ripped down, which I got to help with, and a new part added. And I got to be involved with that to some degree. Electric and hybrid vehicles are here, and with them, a new era of diagnostics. Don't get left behind. Pico Technologies EV diagnostic kits are your all-in-one solution to safely and efficiently service any electric or hybrid vehicle. From comprehensive high-voltage system analysis and insulation testing to guided step-by-step procedures, Pico puts the power of confident repairs right at your fingertips. Future-proof your shop, boost your efficiency, and become the go-to expert for the next generation of cars. Visit PicoAuto.com today. That's PicoAuto.com. This episode of Diagnosing the Aftermarket A to Z is brought to you by Autel. Autel is a global developer and manufacturer of award-winning professional automotive diagnostic tools and service equipment, trusted by technicians, educators, and shop owners across North America. With diagnostics at their core, Autel's real-world solutions support repair workflows ranging from full-system vehicle diagnostics to servicing the most advanced automotive technologies. What sets Autel North America apart is the team behind the tools. Dedicated experts across sales, training, and technical support, each bringing deep, hands-on experience supporting professional technicians. When questions arise, you're working with people who understand the vehicles, the procedures, and the real-world demands of modern repair. Whether diagnosing complex drivability concerns, servicing TPMS systems, validating repairs, or working with ADOS and advanced safety technologies, Autel tools are engineered to support accurate, efficient repairs in strict accordance with OEM procedures and standards. To learn more about Autel and their diagnostic solutions, visit autel.com, AUTEL.com. Ever feel like you've got to play politics just to get fed? One guy gets the gravy, you get the garbage, and then the ad says, great culture. Independent Wrench Jobs is a new tech-only community to help you find better independent shops, fair dispatch, steady work, real leadership, no games. Start with the free salary survey for your city, shop-by-shop pay, perks, and benefits before you waste another interview. And if you're applying now, use Autotech Resume Pro to generate a resume and shop-specific cover letter in about 2 minutes. Built by Technician Find, serving the industry since 2017. Join free at independentwrenchjobs.com. So that's really my background. It is not heavy, right? I just can't stress to you. I make it up as I go. I had to invent this, not genius by any mean. And somebody that knew what they were doing would have just went to the store and got it. They wouldn't have had to stand in the freaking plumbing aisle staring at the ABS, because that's what it was, black ABS pipe, staring at it for 30 minutes or more to come up with the idea of, what if I put this new ABS P-trap in and then I screw this coupler so that I can buy a short piece of, you know, I think it was 2-inch PVC with another adapter to couple it to the drain spout or tube coming out of the bottom of the sink. That's what I ended up doing. And sure, looking at it, it looks cool. More importantly, it doesn't leak. And then, yeah, the walls got painted, do the trim, fill in the holes from the brad nailer, paint the trim. Just, I mean, trying to take great care and doing a really nice job. You know, I think this house was built in the 2000s, and yet there was not a GF or GFCI outlet in the bathroom. It was just conventional. So we're putting in GFCIs. So the reason I tell you this story was it was supposed to be a birthday present for, you know, a few hours. It'd just be a nice present. And it ends up being a big deal. Like the equivalent of, oh, I don't know, 3 lifetimes of birthday presents for not just her brother, but her brother, her mother, her other brother, the next door neighbors. Like, it just turns into this massive ordeal. No good deed goes unpunished, right? And it just reminds me of stuff at the shop where it's like somebody comes in and they've had their car to multiple shops and it's got its problem. And finally, either they knew about you right away. And I would say for Riverside's sake, I can speak directly to that for sure. And I got to believe for many of you, it's similar. People avoid coming to you for certain things because you're already known as being the expensive shop. You're good. You got good reviews, but you're expensive. For some of this work, you can go elsewhere, get it done for really no perceptible difference, for less. But then those situations arise where it would have been way, way cheaper just to bring it to us right away. But you didn't. So you tried the other ways first until you didn't have any money left. Then you came to us, or in the unfortunate event that you didn't know about us, right? You just didn't look it up, you know, didn't make use of Google search and reviews and stuff like that. And I don't mean that to be demeaning. I'm not insulting anyone with that. You went by the word of mouth. I'm good with that. It's what you do. But we didn't come up. And now, when you don't know what else to do, you're out of money, the car's still broken, somebody's like, oh, you know, take it to Riverside, take it to so-and-so. So-and-so works there. He'll figure it out. She'll figure it out. Okay. So this person comes in with a sob story. And again, I don't even mean that condescendingly. It's just what it is. they need help and you elect to help them, right? You're not forced to, but as an owner, as a manager, whoever, whatever, whoever makes the call or all of you involved, you're going to help this person out. Like, that sucks what happened to them. This industry has such a bad reputation. Let's do our part to help. And maybe that's not the motivating factor. Maybe it's the Superman cape. I don't know, but you're going to help them out. And then it just goes sideways, right? It's just like one thing after the other. I mean, part of me is being a little facetious or exaggerating for whatever, just to entertain myself. I don't know, but you lift it up on the hoist and the frame bends, or just every bolt breaks, or, I mean, what started out is maybe I can just find this, you know, one bad component, this one bad wire, and it turns into a disaster where, you know, it's water intrusion in the passenger compartment, wiping out pretty much an entire wiring harness, and you've elected to help this person out. It's a charity case. And I don't know. Do I actually believe no good deed goes unpunished? I don't think so. I think we remember either the most recent sideways event, or for sure the bad stuff. You know, just by our nature, we remember the bad stuff. We don't necessarily remember the times where we did a charity case and it was uneventful and we got a thank you and a good review. We don't really remember that. But boy, oh boy, that one where, man, you know, I'm just going to help this person out here and I'll let them bring their own parts. This one time, I never, ever, ever put in customer parts, but gosh, you know, you've just had such a rough go of it. I'll help you out. You bring your parts, I'll put them in. And then it just turns into a nightmare. You remember all those. So no, I guess I don't actually believe no good deed goes unpunished. I do believe that we have biases and we do remember the bad things. Like, there are times we went up to her brother's house and did some work, whatever it is, the kitchen sink, the garbage disposal, the first time the toilet clogged really bad and getting it unstuck, not knowing that the wax ring was probably pushing into the drain. I'll have to remember that one. Yeah, you know, whatever. The water heater broke. Just forget about the times that went up there with little to no fanfare and where things went well and it worked and we got a thank you and a meal and everything was considered good. Didn't even think twice about it. But boy, oh boy, when the floor is rotted out, you have to create bracing for the bathtub and cut up the new vanity so that it fits over the plumbing just right, and then go build a drain and something that was just supposed to take, you know, maybe a day or two tops turns into a week solid. Yeah, that's the one you remember. And that's the one you make podcast episodes about, evidently. But this is my plea then. That is not true. No good deed doesn't go unpunished, that we just remember them that way. And that, yes, just keep doing the good deeds. It works out way more in our favor. I don't tell my wife I'm going to freaking use her advice about positive energy. Actually, don't tell Tracy either. They buy into that, this positive energy junk. They're actually kind of right, though. There's reference material. It's not necessarily energy, but you do good things and good things typically happen to you, right? They say it's energy. I disagree. I have a different idea of what energy is than theirs. Mine's a little more complex to explain and maybe the subject of another episode. But in this case, yeah, keep going, fighting the good fight. Keep helping people out when you can, where you can. And yeah, it's not true. Even when you do get punished, it's not because it's a good deed. It's just was going to happen eventually anyways. It's just this one lines up with our biases and gives us a reason to complain, I guess. So that is how I will leave you. I really, really appreciate you listening. If you have ideas for other episodes, please don't hesitate to shoot off an email, or if you want to be on the podcast, have ideas for people to be on the podcast, just email me at mattfonslowpodcast@gmail.com or fire me a message on Facebook or steal my phone number from, oh, pretty much anybody and text me. I really look forward to the ideas. There's one brewing I like a lot of questions as of late. I'm guessing driven by YouTube shorts or maybe Facebook reels, maybe Twitter stuff too, or X, whichever it is, or TikTok. Could be TikTok. Rushmore, not the movie, but the Rushmore lists. So I'm thinking I'm going to do that. That is really neat. I've gotten a few emails about that. So thank you for those ideas. And I look forward to more. And yeah, look forward to having you on the podcast if you want to, or tracking down someone and forcing them against, I mean, asking them nicely to be on the podcast because of listener demand. Thank you to our sponsors, Pico Technology, Autel, and Independent Wrench Jobs. And thank you to the Automotive Repair Podcast Network. They're the ones that make this all happen. Even Tracy. I think she edits this sometimes, so she has to do a lot of cutting and splicing. Lots. I wonder if she's ever seen Fight Club. If you know, you know. All right. Thank you again, and until next time, take care.
You've been listening to Diagnosing the Aftermarket A to Z with Matt Fonslow on the Automotive Repair Podcast Network. Download our exclusive podcast app at automotiverepairpodcastnetwork.com because the best conversations in the industry start here. Want Matt to cover a specific topic? Check the show notes for his email. Your input matters.